Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, the comedians that perform here, and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what helps make up our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Dawn Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm thrilled to introduce you to the folks from Old Town Cidery, a hip outdoor tasting room, aka the Cider Yard in downtown Winchester, Virginia. They're serving up hard apple cider that is 100% grown, pressed, fermented, and packaged by Glaze Apples. Since 1937, four generations of Glazes have added to the history of premium fruit harvest between the Blue Ridge and Allegheny Mountains. They have a true seed-to-sip product, where the apples do all the talking. Laughers, today on the show, we have Kelly Kinsey, their tasting room manager, Stephen Kelly, their cider maker, as well as brother and co-owner David Glaze, and maybe later Philip. Welcome to the show, Kelly, Stephen, David, and Philip III. If we hope to see him today, because he's busy in the orchard, but we have the rest of them here, and it's great to have them all on today.
It's great to be here.
Thanks for having us, Dawn.
Oh, I'm so excited about this. And that was Stephen. Say hi, Stephen.
Hello.
This is so exciting. Yes. So we may have a surprise appearance later by Philip Glaze III, but laughers, he's out there busy working hard. David was telling us. So if he drops in, we just want to kind of not surprise you. And if he doesn't, know that he's out there making and help making things happen to bring you the best cider and best of the vegetables. On top of vegetables, what am I talking about? Apples that you can buy. I know. So anyways, you know, my human is showing, but I'm so excited to have you guys on today. Kelly, we recently took a cooking class with Chef Jordan making gnocchi out at One Tribe Farm in Mount Sydney. And we talked about having Old Town Cidery on the show. And now we're here.
Yeah.
Can't believe this is happening.
That's awesome.
I know. How fun was that?
We don't mess around. We make things happen around here.
That is exactly what we do. And the more we talk, the more I was looking forward to bringing all of you on today, because I think more and more people need to know what you guys are doing here in the Valley. And David, I'd like to start with you. Glaze Apples has been distributing fresh fruit locally, regionally, and beyond for four generations. So this is so cool that you guys now have hard cider you're making. Where did this originate? How did this come to be?
The ultimate goal for us is to always keep the land in apples. And right now with development and everything going on, there are a lot of farmers that are being pushed out. And so for us, creating a market for hard cider and using our apples brings more money back to the orchard, which is going to allow us to plant more trees. That's the quick answer. But at the same time, I've been making cider in my basement for 10 or 15 years. And we've also been researching the correct apples to use for hard cider. And 10 years ago, Top worked some old apple trees with 12 or 15 or so different cider varieties to test the climate here in Virginia and figure out what we can grow, what we can store, and what we can ferment. And so as those trees grew older, you know, 3 or 4 years later, we had fruit, and then we had juice, and then we had to figure out what to do with it. So we've been growing apples. The primary, you know, revenue stream is the wholesale business where we pack apples and ship to several markets in different areas throughout this, you know, the U.S., but also export as well. And then we, 2 years ago, put in a processing facility that allows us to juice and process the apples. And we've been servicing the hard cider and wine industry in Virginia for 2 or 3 years now. And last year decided it was time to launch our own product. So we brought Stephen on. So it's been a 10, 15 year, you know, idea in the making. It, you know, you're going to plant an apple tree, you better be ready for a long-term goal, because it takes 30 years.
Whoa.
Until that tree is starting to go downhill. So you're not planting an apple tree and seeing fruit in 5 years. You got to know what you're going to be doing in the next 30, 40, 50, 100 years from now. So that's the way we look at it. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, I like that. You know, you've four generations of apple growers. Do you have any, what's your earliest memory of working on the apple orchard?
The earliest memory I have wasn't necessarily working, but it's hanging out on my dad's Ford Bronco as you drive down the rows grabbing apples from the trees. And we use a cedar tree from the orchard every year for Christmas. And so I've got a lot of memories of going out there with a chainsaw and cutting down trees.
Oh, God.
Not apple trees, cedar trees.
I mean, were those huge trees, the cedar trees?
It can be. There's an old Virginia law that you're legally allowed to cut down a cedar tree within 2 miles of your orchard because a cedar tree produces galls that infect the tree with cedar rust bacteria. And so my dad gets pretty giddy around Christmas and we can go around and chop down as many as we want. But you take home the perfect one and you leave the others.
You leave the other. That's exciting. Now, when you were in the truck, did you pick those apples too? When you saw your father picking the apples, were you reaching out of the window and doing the same thing, or would he let you?
Oh, yeah, of course. Okay. He probably took it out of my allowance, but he let us.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's such a great story. You guys, this Old Town Cidery, you decided to launch it in February 2020. Right before the world shut down. So what kinds of pivots, if any, did you all have to make compared to what you had originally planned?
So in your question, you say we opened right when the world shut down, and that was the biggest pivot we made. And it actually ended up being a blessing in disguise. We were ready to pull the trigger on a downtown tasting room that was going to be indoor only with no outdoor space. And governor's telling you to close the doors when we wanted to open doors. So we decided to open the cider yard, which is now our outdoor tasting room, outdoor only seating. And it has turned out to be absolutely wonderful. So
yeah,
but you know, when you look at it, it looks like we did it on purpose.
Right. It turned out really wonderful. And you got a really cool location too. I'm learning that this outdoor cider yard you guys started is located behind the former building that housed Glaze and Brother Lumber Company that was established in 1854. That's mind blowing to me. Is the lumber yard of yesteryear the cider yard today? Is that
correct?
Oh my gosh.
That's kind of where our vision came from. And the juice company is actually Glaze and Brother Juice Company. And that is our LLC. That is, you know, we're doing business as Old Town Cidery, but the entity is Glaze and Brother Juice Company. And that's paying homage to the two Glaze brothers that were milling lumber down at the same site we're selling cider.
That is so neat. So that's, I mean, is the family heritage what excites you the most about its current location, or is there more to it than that?
Family heritage.
Yeah.
And also all the people that come in and say, oh my God, I remember you working here when I was 14 with your uncle. There's a lot, but it's always, for us, it's trying to keep the community, keep apples integrated in the community as long as we can. And our namesake allows us to do that. And so pivoting off our family heritage in any way we can inevitably is going to allow us to keep apples in the ground. So,
yeah, you guys have a lot of apples because there's 600 acres, actually more than that, of apple orchards. How much of those acres or how much of that would you say is dedicated to the cidery now?
Right now, we've got about 15 to 20 acres of cider-specific fruit, and we're looking to expand that acreage as well. But another thing we're focused on right now is finding a dual-purpose apples, so apples that we can pack and sell to a market, and that also have the right bricks and acidity for Steven. And so if we can pack an apple and use the culls to process and then ferment that juice, that keeps us vertically integrated from the tree to the can, and it's more money back to the acre. And so hopefully we can plant more trees and keep the developments out. Although we like people.
Yeah, you're people and tree lovers, I would say. Yes. How many trees do you have on this? How many trees?
No.
Oh.
million. I mean, there's it ought to be from the planting that we're doing. We've got some trees that are 30 years old and that are spaced out 20 feet because they're so big. But then you also have high density plantings that are within 6 feet of each other, and there's 100,000 in a row, and then there's 1,000 rows in the whole orchard. So a lot of apples.
Do you guys ever do tours of the orchard or anything like that?
Not yet. This is our first taste of retail. So we've been strictly wholesale up until now, and inviting people out to the orchard, we recognize there's a huge value added.
Yes.
So that is definitely in our radar. And I'm sure we'll get to that with some of the other, you know, topics we discussed today.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just envisioning like wagon rides, you know, people getting educated.
Honestly, with most of our customers that come to drink the cider, we recommend a lot of the farmers markets and the family run markets that we work with locally. And so there's a lot of pick your own, a lot of great places to enjoy agritourism in the area. And is there room for more? Probably. But at the same time, everybody that's doing it does a really good job of it.
Yeah.
That's actually allowed a lot of the apple growers in the area to stay in business, is having farm stands and you know, growing that aspect of their business. We just haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
We're a commercial grower. We're one of the largest growers in Virginia. And you know, with the way our model was set up by our grandfather and great grandfather, it's a little harder to transition. It takes time, you know, if we were to figure out how to integrate a market and this and that. So
yeah. Speaking of that, that's kind of the background for sure, is this wholesale with the apples, this wholesale marketing that you do. So where do you distribute the apples? At restaurants, farmers markets? What's typical where we can find it, and what's the furthest out you ship your apples?
Yeah. Furthest out, Egypt.
We shipped
apples to Egypt in the past. 2 years ago, we shipped apples to India. So I guess that's a little further than Egypt.
Right.
We've got a pretty good export market. We grow a lot of Red Delicious, and other countries love Red Delicious apples.
I love Red Delicious.
What?
I love Red Delicious. My favorite apple is Red Delicious.
Beautiful. You don't really hear that often. You and my dad are the only people that say that, I think.
Well, then I need to meet dad because
So we've got a small export market, and we're, you know, being so close to the Port of Virginia and the Port of Philadelphia, it keeps freight down and allows us to get down to Central America and the Caribbean at a very competitive rate compared to growers from Washington State or New York. As far as regional go, our largest customer is Walmart. And so we ship to a Walmart distribution center down in Southwest Virginia or Tennessee, really. But our apples will end up anywhere. You know, there's small markets, small juice bars in the DC area that take them. Down where you are, there's a lot of small growers and a really good network of local food distributors. We don't necessarily have that up here. And so being able to find our apples in the market outside of Winchester is rare, unless you kind of looked east towards the city, towards Washington, D.C. But that being said, obviously I'm a little biased and I think we grow the best apples. But what you're getting down in Harrisonburg and Charlottesville, it's a Virginia apple and that's what matters. So they're good down there too.
That is so exciting. Well, I'm going to be looking for labels now that I pick up my Red Delicious. I'm going to be looking for glaze.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly where I get it from. That's so exciting. Are you guys having any challenges right now? You know, there's supply chain challenges. What kinds of things are you going through with that right now? What's happening currently?
With labor challenges or what?
Yeah, labor or like shipping product anywhere right now. Yeah, what's happening?
I mean, as everybody knows, the cost of production is going up. The cost of living is going up and nobody wants to work. And so we are stretched very thin. We rely heavily on the H-2A program that we work with Mexican government. Mm. And so they provide us with legal workers that come up here to pick and are now actually in our packing house as well, because we can't find anybody local or, you know, nobody wants to work. Or they already have a job. I shouldn't make it.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Cost, as far as the cost of goods and production goes, yeah, that's a big challenge because although we are a commodity, it's very hard for us to raise the price for the consumer. And so as the cost of us to pack apples goes up for Walmart, the cost for a consumer to purchase it doesn't. Mm. And so we're struggling. Walmart still wants the margin, so they're going to, our customers still want the margin. So they are going to try to capture that margin on their end, and we're doing the same. And so, yeah, there's challenges in the supply chain. We do, as far as having available material, right now our biggest challenge is we've got a really good crop of apples, and we're running low on apple bins and running low on storage space. It's a good problem to have. But yeah, there's always challenges. I would say this year has been one of the most challenging, though.
Our cider keeps getting buried behind crates and crates and crates of apples. There's just apples everywhere.
Apples everywhere. And cider. Well, the cider gives, the Old Town Cider, it gives you a diversification in your business model. That's a nice, pleasant surprise. And I love to see what's happening there. I don't understand a whole lot about making cider, but we have somebody on the show today who does. And that's Stephen. You are the cider maker. How did you become a cider maker, and how did you end up at Old Town Cidery? Please do tell us.
It was quite the journey, but to shorten it down and make it as concise as possible, as soon as I entered the workforce in my early 20s, I started working in the alcohol industry through retail, then into distribution, and from wine and beer and cider distribution, I found an opening for a sales job with a cidery in the state of Virginia, and started with sales, started doing retail, doing tap room management for them and everything, and slowly in that position, as a small company, so everybody played a part in a lot of different things, I slowly started to learn and take over the production and the cider making for that cidery. So really learned with a lot of trial and error. Also, you know, how everybody learns this day and age, you Google and YouTube. So with a combination of all that stuff,
Steven,
finally figured
secrets.
Out how to do it.
That YouTube, that's how, if I want to know how to do anything, I'm on YouTube. How to fill in blank.
Yeah, and it's also a, you know, a good way to learn what not to do when you get to see somebody else fail.
That's true. Yeah. How long do you think it took you to understand how to make cider? Like, is this a few months process? Or
if I told you I had a full understanding right now, I'd be lying to you. I feel like every time I come into work, every time I, you know, get into the juice plant and the cidery, I feel like I'm learning something new every day. But I guess to, you know, get to the point to where I had the confidence to package and sell a product, it certainly took a couple of years. Like Dave was saying, you know, you start in your basement, you start filling up jugs, you start doing a lot of things wrong, troubleshooting that and addressing that. So it definitely takes, I would say before I got the confidence to take other juice and to ferment it and package it, it definitely took a couple of years.
Yeah. So you, do you do most of your own taste testing, or do you enlist others into your taste testing of your products?
Well, that's the tough conundrum that I come into, because I'm very critical of myself. So when I do bring other people in, like my significant other or family members or friends, I surround myself with very nice, kind, sweet people. So I'm leery to trust them when they say that they like the product, because nobody's going to tell you that your kid's ugly to your face. But I try to branch out to as many people as I can to let them try it. But it's not until somebody that doesn't know my name or my occupation unknowingly tries it in front of me and then they enjoy it, that's really when the seal of approval is stamped.
Yeah, I like that. I would feel this exactly the same way. I like the whole ugly kid thing. anything. They're not going to tell you to your face. Oh my gosh.
Well, I learned that in college. I'm not a very good cook, and my sweet, sweet patient girlfriend will take a bite of something that I'll make to eat for dinner at home and say, wow, this is great. And I'll take a bite out of it and I'll say, no, it's not. Thank you for being nice.
Well, we got to give a shout out to the girlfriend. What's her first name?
Her name's Megan. She's the best.
Oh, Megan, she's the best. You got to make sure she hears this when it comes out. We love you, Megan. That's so good. Hey, Stephen, I'm curious, were you good at chemistry in high school? How did you figure out you would have the ability to make cider?
I wasn't really great at chemistry. Okay. I wasn't really great at anything in school other than recess and lunch. But I definitely had some strengths, and sciences and maths were definitely two of my strengths. But I think I put a lot of pressure on myself when I was in school to do well and to have a firm understanding of everything instead of just kind of letting it sink in naturally. And that's kind of what I've done as an adult. And since I got out of school, I felt like I've learned a lot better just letting things sink in at their own pace and gaining an understanding on my terms, as opposed to 30 other people in the same room trying to learn the same thing 30 different ways.
Yeah.
I guess if that's...
Yeah, I like that.
But yeah, I'm decent at chemistry, I guess, to answer the question. I don't know. It's a lot like I said, I try to cook, and it's a lot like following a recipe. When you make making cider is a lot like making any other kind of consumable thing that you would do. It's just following a recipe and tinkering it the way that you like to tinker.
Yeah, and making it your own with your own flavor on it. That's really great.
Absolutely.
What is the process of turning apples into hard cider exactly? Can you tell us about that in a little more detail, Stephen?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I guess the first step and the most important step is picking the apples and pressing them into juice. So for a lot of cideries, that's as simple as picking up the phone and calling the closest person that purveys juice around you. But one thing that sets us apart is that we actually, you know, like David mentioned, we grow the apples and we pick the apples and we press the apples ourselves, which gives us a lot of flexibility in blending with different varietals. So like grapes in wine, if you're familiar with having a Chardonnay or a Cabernet Sauvignon,
very familiar.
Apples are also, yes, yeah. Apples are also different varietals as well, with all their own different unique characteristics. So we touched on earlier, there's Red Delicious, you know, there's Golden Delicious. A lot of people are familiar with that, but there's many, many, many other apples that have a lot of unique characteristics that can play a huge factor in the different taste and everything with that. So the fact that we get to, Dave does a great job blending different apples that will complement each other well. So the first step of our process is starting with really, really good juice that Dave and Phil both do a great job putting together. The next step would be you want to make sure that the yeast that you're adding to the juice is going to dominate all other, you know, wild yeast, bacteria, anything else that might occur naturally on the skins and the fruit of the apple, and then pass along through the juice. So apples have naturally occurring sulfites, but we add very little just to make sure that our yeast will thrive in the environment that we're introducing it to. And then the next step is pitching the yeast. And, you know, a lot of cider makers say the term cider maker is falsely given to a person, because the person isn't making the cider. It's really the yeast, the millions and billions and bajillions of little microbacteria and Microflora. They're the ones that really do the job in turning the apple juice into apple cider. All I really do is just help them out. I guess you could call me a concierge. Just keep them happy. Different yeast and different juices all have different things going on. So a big part of my job is just keeping the yeast happy and temperate so that they do their job well and efficiently, as opposed to poorly and inefficiently, which can then lead to off flavors, off aromas, and in worst case scenarios, just rotten juice.
Right. And those you pitch those and you say, forget about it. Right. Or
No, there's a lot of testing on the juice before we pitch.
Okay.
And there's a lot of monitoring during fermentation. So if, you know, without going into too much, yeast, like myself, are very gluttonous. And when they're in an environment full of sugar, they will just eat as much, you know, if they could be in a warm environment full of sugar, they'd eat it as fast as they could. But in doing so, would be a very inefficient fermentation that would lend, you know, sulfuric notes or sauerkrauty flavors, just many, many different off flavors that can arise in cider. But, you know, as long as you can keep an eye on and moderate the amount of nutrients that the yeast are getting and regulating the temperature at which they ferment, whether it be colder to slow them down or warmer to keep them going. A lot happens in between the pitching of the yeast and the finishing of the fermentation.
A lot happens. What do you mean a lot happens? Just organically with the chemical process? What do you mean?
A lot of, like earlier when I mentioned that the cider can often, the yeast can often work inefficiently.
Okay.
The biggest thing that I do is just monitor that they have the right amount of nutrients, the right kind of nutrients. So we'll supplement them with potassium, nitrogen, a few other different nutrients to help further them along the way, and regulating the temperature is also a big step to it. It's kind of a, in the beer world, as many beer drinkers will know, there's basically two types of beers. There's ales and lagers.
Right.
And the biggest difference in ales and lagers is the temperature at which they're fermented. Lagers are often cold fermented and the yeast stays at the bottom of the tank, where ales are often fermented at warmer temperatures and at the top ferment. With cider making, it's a lot like wine making. You want to keep it at, you kind of want to keep a foot in both doors and regulate and balance that accordingly.
Well, I learned something there today. Actually, I favor the lagers and I had no idea. I mean, I figured there was something different between them, but I didn't know the detail behind that. So I appreciate that, Steve. And I've been educated today, edumacated.
Yeah, so. Yeah, because they're fermented at a cold temperature, that often leans towards the floral aromas that you can get in an ale. That's why lagers are often clean, crisp, easy drinking. And that's kind of what we go for with our cider, too.
Yes, easy drinking. Speaking of easy drinking, I'd love to talk to Kelly, the tasting room manager, about the flavors offered, because they have a handful on tap in cans. In fact, 6 different types of hard ciders with a range of flavors. And Kelly, I understand there is also a rotating guest cidery that's featured on tap. Can you tell us more about the 6 different types of ciders that you have and more about the rotating guest cidery you have on tap? Like how often, what types, and how often you change it out?
Yeah, so we usually buy 2 or 3 six-stall kegs from the guest cideries, and it just kind of depends how long it takes us to get through them. We did like a slushy machine in the summer. So sometimes we throw the guest tap in there, or we do a lot of like tasting flights so people can try a few different ciders. And I feel like they're pretty popular in the flights also. But the whole reason we do that is because, you know, we were the juice company in the first place, and a lot of cideries buy our juice. So it's kind of like a way for us to keep a good relationship with the companies we're already dealing with. So most of the guest taps we put on are glazed juice ciders, just not Old Town ciders. But we have 6 different ciders in cans right now, but we also do some seasonal ones. So we've made more than just the 6 varieties, I guess you could say. We've got 3 different light ones, which are lower calorie, lower sugar, lower alcohol, because most of our ciders come out right about like 7%, which is a little bit higher than your, you know, Bud Light, Miller Light, Michelob. But I mean, Steven would be good for this question too, because he actually makes the ciders. But we have our Downtown Light, the Old Town Light, and the Honey Crisp Light. And then we do a Pear Secco. That's probably our most popular cider that we make. We also do a Raspberry Rosé. And then the Valley Roots is our staple. That's like our signature blend of apples. And then we've got the Pippin, which is our driest, which is also a single varietal. So that is just Pippin apples that go into that one. But then seasonal ones we've done like a hop guava. We've got a pina, which is a pineapple one. We just did a fresh hops, which isn't fruited, which is really cool because you actually get like the floral flavors from the hops in that one. And yeah. I can't remember. What was our other seasonal?
And I'll just go back to Kelly's comment about the ciders being at 7%. That's just because of all the natural sugars in an apple. On average, an apple has 30 grams of natural sugars in it. And so if Steven puts the yeast in there, the yeast is going to eat all that sugar, just like he explained, and convert it into 7% alcohol.
That's cool. Yeah, I like that.
My dad's dog just ran in here, so if you hear something...
It's odd.
That's all good. We're family here. That's really great. Kelly, I'm wondering, not a lot of people do the job. Wait, pause. You guys can only listen right now. One day we will do video so you can enjoy a moment like this. They just put the beautiful dog on the screen, and now I'm in love.
Yeah. I'm allergic to dogs, and that's the only one I'll pick up.
Oh, what's the puppy's name?
Audie. It's my favorite day when I go into the packing house and he's chilling in the office. I'm like, Audie's here.
What kind of dog is he?
Boykin Spaniel.
Okay. Yeah, he's beautiful. Beautiful dark brown dog. I'll give you guys the visual.
Swamp poodle.
Swamp poodle. Yeah, he loves where he's at. You can tell. It's awesome. Kelly, I have a question for you. Not everybody is a tasting room manager or knows what that involves exactly. So can you give what does a tasting room manager do? I don't want to assume.
You would like do the schedule and just make sure that everyone who's working is trained and, you know, keep all the ABC laws, you know, make sure we're like abiding those. And at Glaze, I do a little bit of everything, a little bit more than just the tasting room.
That's just what's on the business card.
Yeah. we self-distribute through VWDC. So right now I'm like during the week I do sales, and then I do a lot of the actual distributing also. So I'm kind of running all over Northern Virginia and trying to sell cider and dropping off ciders, and then you know, being at the tasting room on the weekends, making sure that is all running smoothly.
And how did you find Old Town Cidery? How did you find your position?
They found me.
Oh, they did. How did they do that? How did they find you?
Well, it's all, you know, it's a small town. We all kind of know each other. My brothers grew up with the Glaze boys, so I've known the family forever. And I was a bar manager, and it just kind of seems like a natural progression. Get out of the restaurant scene and kind of move more into, you know, the alcohol side.
Yeah.
Which I was already dealing with, but it's just like, you know, being on the other side of the bar, I guess.
Yeah. You guys are a really well-oiled machine, I feel like. And you're doing great things together and branching out into agritourism, and you've got these great ciders. And I know we've talked about the different flavors. You know, on a personal note, which of the flavors is each of your favorites? We know you've said what the most popular one is. What is your favorite cider that you all sell? So what about you, Kelly? We'll start with you.
My favorite's the raspberry rosé, because it has a nice like fruitiness up front, but it still has a dry finish on it. And I don't like things that are too sweet. I also really like our Old Town Light. It's one of our newer ones that we've done. Like I said, if I'm going to have like a couple of them, like drinking 7% ones the whole time isn't like the best look. So, the Old Town Light's only like 4.5%, 5%, and it has a nice like tart green apple flavor to it. But it's almost like a cider, like seltzer, like it's like a little bit lighter, but, yeah, I like both of those a lot.
And I'll say too, the raspberry, we grow the raspberries on the orchard as well. Mm-hmm. And so you have that other connection to the land. So obviously we're not going to be able to grow pineapple to put in the cider, but any opportunity we can to grow what we want to co-ferment or co-blend with, we're going to do it, or forage it.
Right. So,
like the Pear Seco, they're Virginia pears, but we've recently planted 20 or 30 pear trees. So in 7 years, the Pear Seco will be off from our farm. It's
going to
take a while.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. And Stephen had mentioned earlier, David, that you're really good about pairing the different, you know, apples, fruits, putting the different pairing.
Pear Seco.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. I was like, wait, what am I missing? Wait. It happens, you know, gray hair. Anyway, but you put the different flavors together really well. What's your favorite cider that you make, David? What's your favorite?
I'll be honest, I'm a beer drinker, and I love the Honeycrisp Light because to me it resembles beer.
Okay.
I only drank beer until we hired Steven, and now I'm a cider drinker. I'm very proud of what Steven creates, and I'll drink them all, but I tend to lean towards the Honeycrisp Light or the Downtown Light, one of the lights, because to me it resembles more of a beer. Now we do have a new product, and this is going to be Steven's answer, so I'll let him talk about it.
Okay.
But that's also up there as my favorite.
I forgot about that one for a second.
Now listen to laughers. Are you on the edge of your seats wherever you are, in your car, in your living room? Now we have to know, almost hearing the drum roll as we speak, because we're going to bring Steven on as he tells us what that is. What's he talking about?
They're definitely hitting at our newest release, which is our Wolf Creek Reserve. So all of our flavors that we've mentioned so far are available in cans. And our Wolf Creek Reserve is our first bottle. So it's in a 750 Ooh. Milliliter clear wine bottle. And the fun thing about the Wolf Creek Reserve, and one thing that I love about it now and love about it going forward, is that it is going to be a constantly changing and evolving blend of different cider varietal apples. Obviously, all the apples that we use to make all of our ciders can be considered a cider varietal because they can be made into cider. But there are some apples, for example, Ashmead Kernel, a Hughes Crab, a Kingston Black, a Dabinet, a Wixen. These are all apples that older generations, like these are all apples that my grandma's familiar with because they're old Virginia apples that are very popular and grow very well in the state, but also have a lot of great characteristics like low acid profiles and high sugar profiles that make very, very delicious and unique cider. So With all that being said, we just bottled our first batch of Wolf Creek Reserve, and at the moment, that's my favorite. But I also, my go-to, my daily go-to, that's a treat. That's a nice treat yourself cider. But my go-to when I'm in the tasting room and everything, because the Wolf Creek Reserve is only available in bottle, my go-to in the tasting room and when I'm drinking stuff that we have on draft is our Pippin, which is a single varietal cider. It's the only cider we do at the moment that is a single varietal. And it is an Albemarle Pippin apple that was, Dave can tell you a lot more about the Albemarle Pippin than I can, but in the layman's term, it was, it's been around for centuries, and it's an often sought after and coveted apple for many cider makers. And the fact that I get the opportunity to not only keg and can that cider, but also drink it is a treat for me. And I take a lot of pride in that. And that's why that one's one of my favorites too.
Wow. Now I'm just wanting to go try this Wolf Creek Reserve and these flavors right now. I don't know about you, Laffers. There's a lot of apples we're talking about here, David. How many varieties of apples are you guys growing?
We've got about 20 or more different varieties of known varieties. And we've also got about a dozen or so wild trees that Stephen's been experimenting for it. Fermenting wild foraged fruit. And so those are a variety unknown. I'm sure we could send them off to a lab and figure out who and what they're related to. But varieties we know of, maybe
2024. And I didn't realize that you are, if I heard Stephen right, you're growing apples that our grandparents are more familiar with than we are. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, and all our production has all been driven by the wholesale market.
Okay.
And so our grandparents were able to buy a stamen on the shelf. Now you can't buy a stamen apple on the shelf. But a lot of these apples that were grown 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago have qualities that cider makers like. They're not as high in sugar. They have a little more acidity. And so there's a nice balance of pH and Brix in these apples. But the consumer doesn't always like to taste that apple. And so historically, apples were grown for hard cider. The apples were not grown for consumption.
Mm.
And consumption apples came after Prohibition.
Okay.
We started talking the Red Delicious, the Fuji, the Gala. These are all come from breeding programs all over the U.S.
The Honeycrisp.
So it's a crazy world out there. I mean, there's over a million different varieties of apples in the world.
There's so many more apples than I knew existed.
Me neither until today. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Crazy. That is crazy. What would you say? You're making apples, you know, markets can use them. You export them wholesale. What would you say is the smallest order someone can do? Like if there was a at home making cider and they just wanted to try it out, you know, in their garage, to like big clients, do you serve both small, independent kind of small business or?
Three years ago, I served everybody.
Okay.
This year, I don't have time for everybody. So we have had to implement a minimum order. That being said, if you're a novice cider maker, or if it's you, Don, I'll ship you one apple. But honestly, it all depends on the situation and the availability. If you're local and you're going to come by and pick up 10 boxes of apples and pick them up and be on your way, great. And so it really depends on the situation, the timing, and the availability. But our biggest thing is the more people that try, that taste, that learn about the apples we grow and the product we create, the better off it is for Virginia fruit in the long run. So
you're open and flexible. Yeah. Beyond the apples, you also in the cider yard, or at the cider yard, I should say, you have events that are open to the public. Kelly, can you speak a little bit on what kinds of events you've had that are open to the public at the cider yard?
Well, we've been trying to get like food trucks down there just to get a bigger draw of people. And we're right next door to Winchester Brew Works, which is a local brewery. So it's kind of cool because when we do have food trucks, they set up, you know, like in between the two of us. So they kind of get business from both places, which is good for them and us. We've done a book pop-up with the Winchester Book Gallery, which is my friend Christine. She has a bookstore on the Walking Mall in Winchester. So that was cool. She set up a little book table, had some Johnny Appleseed books and some, you know, cider making stuff. Most of the other things we've done have been like ticketed or like private events. We just did a dinner actually with Chef Jordan and his business partner, Zach, for the release of the Wolf Creek Reserve. We did a 4-course tasting, like cider pairing dinner. That was really cool with them. We've done like a build your own bouquet with my friend Rachel of Rachel's Bloomers. So you get, you know, 2 ciders, small bites, and then she kind of walks you through building your own bouquet, and then you get to take the flowers and like the vase and everything home with you. And have we done? We've done like a rehearsal dinner also. But we're kind of new. We just opened up the tasting room in April. So we're kind of newer doing events and stuff like that. I'd say probably the food trucks are like the biggest one that's, you know, open to the public to get people down there.
What's the size of your cider yard in terms of people that you can seat there? Say if somebody was considering a private event, how many people can you see in that area?
Well, you use the word private, so I'll see if we can fit in there. 120, 200 people.
Okay. And what types of private events, in addition to what you just shared, have you had? Just give people some ideas of maybe how they can utilize that space for themselves.
We've had the Shenandoah University alumni reach out to us, you know, to rent the space to plan whatever it is they need to work on. The rehearsal dinners are definitely like a big one for weddings. We had like a wedding after party.
Yeah. A couple of like group happy hours, birthday parties. We're kid friendly too. Very kid friendly space. Yeah. And so it's, you know, it's an outdoor space where you can enjoy the fresh air and get some good juice or some good cider. And so really, any event.
Yeah. We'll and you can pack your own food, like bring
yes,
your own
Dawn.
Food.
Thanks, David.
Yep. You can come down, order delivery, whatever you want.
Yeah. That actually is coming to mind. We, you know, winter will be upon us in a couple of months. Do you guys have outdoor heaters or what's that going to look like over the winter? Are you going to have winter hours?
Well, Dawn, one thing we knew getting ourselves into it that we were opening an outdoor bar.
Yeah.
That there's going to be the element of weather.
Yes.
One thing our dad always taught us growing up is there's no such thing as bad weather, just being improperly prepared.
Okay.
You want to drink outside and it's cold, you better bring your jacket, Dawn.
Noted, David.
Yes, we have outdoor heaters. We have fire pits.
Yeah.
And we will kind of weather the storm, if you will. We'll have hot malt cider available. But we have built a pretty reliable and fun customer base of regulars that if it's pouring down rain, they'll still be out there with us. Now, there are times
that's
where Kelly might be down there by herself when it's raining.
Yeah,
but.
Mm-hmm. That's happened too. But I had a couple. It was like torrential downpour and their little baby like took off all his clothes except for his diaper and was like running around in the rain. And they're just like chilling underneath the canopy, just like enjoying their cider.
That's right. Awesome. Oh. So there is some overhead covering out there in the yard.
Yeah, we have canopies we'll put up.
If you want.
If you need them. Yeah. And there's umbrellas on all the tables and stuff, but depending upon how windy it is, you know, the umbrellas could be not the best option.
Yeah. Stephen, are you there? Stephen?
I am. I'm very sorry. I think I timed out.
That's all right. Well, we're glad you timed back in, because I did want to ask everyone, what is the favorite part about what you do in your role? What is the favorite part of what you do? We'll start with the cider maker that timed back in. What's the favorite part of what you do, Stephen?
Dave touched on it earlier, and one of his biggest goals is keeping apples, you know, in the ground and trees in the ground. And I think that's the most satisfying thing for me, is being able to take something, a raw product like an apple that was grown, and being able to turn it into something that people enjoy. People enjoy apples by themselves, obviously, but being able to play a role in turning the apple into the cider and seeing people take a drink and enjoy that drink, really means a lot to me. And I just feel a lot of self-worth in being able to provide people enjoyable consumptions.
That's great. I love that. How about you, Kelly?
Yeah, I really like interacting with, you know, the people, all of our customers that come through the tasting room. It's really nice to be able to stand behind a product that you, you know, feel good about and you really like yourself. So I like, you know, educating the people about, you know, where we come from and who we are.
That's great. So
that's probably my favorite part. And drinking the cider is not bad, you know.
Yeah, that's a good side benefit mm-hmm. right there. I like that. How about you, David?
That's a loaded question, because every aspect I can argue why I like it, but also why it stresses me out.
That's the fourth generation of glazes right there talking. Okay,
go ahead. I would say the contributions we are making to put Virginia on the map as a cider producing state. Virginia is known as one of the best producers of cider. And I'm not just saying that because I'm biased. If you ask anyone where the best cider comes from, they're going to say Virginia.
That's awesome.
And that could be even compared globally. And so for us, we're doing our part to say, hey, we have the climate to grow these really good apples. We have the experience in the cider maker to make the really good cider. And so it's that connection of, okay, you can pick a cider up off the shelf, but do you know what's in the can? And as the apple grower, we have that connection, and we want the consumer to recognize what's in the can as well.
Right.
Yeah, I like that.
And I also really enjoy working with all of our employees.
Aww.
Not necessarily Kelly. more the ones that I can speak Spanish with, and Kelly and Steven don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's great. I know. Oh, I'm feeling the love. Well, as we wrap up here. Oh, before we wrap up, I see that a question I did want to ask before we do that. And that is, I read that you may also be getting a building space.
So, I was hoping you'd forget that question.
But I'm coming to it anyway. Do you think you would still keep the hip outdoor cider yard as well? What is in store for the future of Old Town Cidery before we wrap up here?
Yeah, so we set up the outdoor cider yard knowing that the existing property was up for development. And just last month, the property sold, which is very bittersweet. But the developers have since reached out to us to talk to us about the opportunity for keeping the yard intact. That being said, yes, we'd have to shut down for construction and this or that. So will we find another location? Yes. Will that be out of the orchard? Maybe. Will it be a brick and mortar downtown? Maybe. Yeah, keep guessing. You'll find us. You'll know.
You'll know, which is a great segue into the next question, because they can find out that information by following you. They can keep updated on the changes for Old Town Cidery that are coming down the pike by connecting with you. So how, as we wrap up here, can the Laughers best follow Old Town Cidery and what's going to be happening?
The best way would be our Instagram or our Facebook. We also have our website. It's all Old Town Cidery. So oldtowncidery.com, on Instagram, we're Old Town Cidery, and on Facebook, we're Old Town Cidery as well.
Yeah, that's great. And they are right now in downtown Winchester in the cider yard that used to be the lumber yard. And this is fall right now, folks. So I can't think of a better time of year to go out and get yourself some hard cider and enjoy the fall weather with these beautiful people. So thank you so much, Kelly, Stephen, David, Audie. And we missed Philip today, but it was still amazing. And maybe next time we have you all on, Philip can join us. So thank you so much. This has been super fun. I look forward to seeing what's our store for Old Town Cidery in the future. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Don.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Yeah, thank you for having us. And thank you to all the laughers for listening.
Yes, laughers. We will be sure to put their information in the show notes as well, so you know exactly where to find them and can enjoy their yummy ciders. And of course, lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
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 Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring a show to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share us with a friend. Until next time, cheers.